G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
A biblical perspective on life, culture and current events. This is 2020 on Vision.
Well, this week, Christian church leaders have gathered together and they have released a joint open letter response to the Australian Law Reform Commission final report that was released late last week. The faith leaders are saying the recommendations in that final report on religious educational institutions and anti-discrimination laws fundamentally misunderstand the nature of religious schools. Now, you might remember after the Labor Party won the 2022 federal election, the Attorney General asked the Australian Law Reform Commission to advise on what amendments to federal law would be necessary to deliver the Labor Party's election promise to uphold religious freedoms and keep LGBTQI people from being discriminated against in religious schools. Well, now there is a very serious debate ahead. Let's talk about the Christian dimension in all of this. Always good to welcome back to 2020 Christian commentator Stephen McAlpine back with us. He's an award-winning Christian author, pastor, and he works as a consultant helping churches and Christian organizations navigate the secular Christian world. Stephen McAlpine, welcome back to 2020.
Great to be with you, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Stephen, I wonder if everyone listening today might appreciate just how serious this is. And the debate is about to heat up, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, and last week was proof of that. And I think the Australian Law Reform Commission heavily skewed its data towards not listening to religious groups seriously, from what I could read of it. I mean, I'm not across all of the, you know, Section 3.2 article, but I do know the big picture stuff that's going on. And for me, as I look at it, there are two competing views of the world that cannot coexist at one level. Well, not particularly when one of them says that the other one is hostile to human beings. And that's probably the issue, right? That there's it's oil and water at the moment. And can our culture allow those two things to coexist? I think that's going to be the big question.
We'd often have a conversation, and for some it sounds like a religious conversation, but your view of the world really does matter. And it's based on whether you think even that very first verse in Genesis, in the beginning God created, you have a different view of the world if you understand that God created. You have a different view of the world if you want to ignore that, try and shuffle that away and put it under the carpet somewhere. Two views, and this is where the rubber hits the road, and get your thoughts on this. What it is to be human looks different depending on the view you have, Stephen.
Yeah, and not just the view you have, the practice you have, because the Australian Law Reform Commission and Equality Australia and those groups are saying that you can hold to a belief without it having to affect your behaviour. And there's nothing in the Bible that would say that about humans. The whole point of being a human is you're an embodied person. And so to say, well, you can hold those beliefs about various things, and even those, you know, especially around what it means to be human, what are humans for, about sex and identity, and all those sorts of questions. You can hold those as abstract beliefs, but on the ground, you must give space for people to express how they wish to. And faith-based organizations are saying to secular people, you do not understand how religion works. It's not just abstract belief, like we're a lollipop head on a stick. It's embodied life. And that's what I think is so hostile in this situation.
Let's stay with this thought on Christians' religious schools being misunderstood for a few moments, because in some sense, because you have different views of the world, things look different if you want to deny and ignore God. But it's almost as though your blinkers keep you from acknowledging that there is something different about that person who holds to a religious faith. How do you see that? Because this is this big divide, isn't it, between the faith-filled person and the secular person.
Well, it's interesting that when you use the word misunderstood, because as I've unpacked it and I think about it, I don't think those who are opposed to the way Christian schools positively choose staff according to their ethic and belief misunderstand what Christian schools are about. I actually don't. I actually think they fully understand it and they don't like it. It's not as if we would go to, as a Christian school, to someone who's a hard secularist who opposes us on the federal, you know, Religious Discrimination Act and say, no, let me explain to you how I view humans and let me explain to you how I view ethical communities that hold those things and let me explain to you how we can fund those while at the same time honouring your view. They go, no, I understand completely what you think and I think it's wrong. That's the key issue, and that's what's going to be the pressure for Christian schools. If they have to face down their opponents who say, I fully understand everything you do, but I think you're wrong, or I think you're damaging and dangerous, and I want it shut down. And that is going to be the, not even going to be, that is the argument coming from those who are opposed to these protections for Christian schools.
And you've got people on the religious side of the debate, and if you call yourself Christian, whether you're a regular churchgoer or whether you're, you know, raising your hands in the air on a Sunday, you recognise that there is something different that happens and the outcomes, because this is being demonstrated now by the major influx of people who just want their kids educated in a Christian school because they can see that there are some outcomes that are happening when you ignore these Christian foundations that don't look nice. Any thoughts here around the outcomes? You've got people who are educated in some Christian religious schools, and you've got those who are educated in what now are values-free zones. Thoughts here from you, Stephen?
Yeah, that's a good point. Look, I'd first want to say that Christian schools are also hoping that they can provide air cover for Islamic schools and Jewish schools and any school that has a faith framework that says we're not exactly like the secular state. And I think Christianity gave those values to the culture through, over the centuries, building up this framework of how you can allow people to hold freedom of conscience and freedom of association. And Glenn Scrivener says some great things about the issues of values, because I think secular schools have values and often they want them to be the same sort of Christianized values, but they kind of water it down and put it in a milkshake. But Glenn Scrivener says that the values that secular schools say they espouse actually spring from a Christian framework. And then he says this, which is, I think, interesting. You can't have the values without the king who gave us the values. All you get is a very sort of judgmental framework. And I think that most secular frameworks don't realise that Christianity gave them the very weapons that they're using against the Christian framework.
It's challenging, isn't it, for some people who are looking at that word secular and realising that, yes, even secularisation has in its roots a Christian foundation, because it helps everyone to get along. When you're living in a pluralist world, so everybody can get along when you have a Christian foundation to what you do. Of course, that definition has changed substantially. But let's talk about, everyone has this view of human flourishing, that we're going to all be really happy if we do this, or we'll be really happy if we do that. And there might be a view of human flourishing which is influencing this debate around LGBTQI rights, and that being contrasted to what Christians will see as a value of human flourishing. What do you think about human flourishing?
Well, the first thing I'd say from a Christian perspective is that the goal of human flourishing is not human flourishing. According to the Bible, the goal of human flourishing is a stepping stone to the glory of God. And Miroslav Volf, the Yale professor, says that a vision of, you know, human flourishing or in our modern culture is withered to this self, the satisfied self. And it doesn't matter the source of those satisfactions in money, sex, power, even religion, he says. The biggest hope we have in our culture is the satisfied self. And the Christian gospel says, no, the biggest hope is that the resurrection and life in the age to come before the one who created us. So you're not just getting this ground level, my human flourishing looks better than yours, because Christian human flourishing also includes suffering. So we have but if human flourishing is the only goal, then it becomes you do you. So I think you've got these two contrasting, you do you and a human is for itself, versus no, the point of the human is not self-expression, but self-denial for the sake of the gospel. That will lead to human flourishing in a way that sometimes other versions of human flourishing don't recognize. One of the aspects of human flourishing, I would say, that Christianity gives us is that we also allow the liberty for other people not to be compelled into what we believe about things. And I think that Christianity gave that to the culture. When that goes away, you will find compulsion from the state towards Christian organizations and other faith-based organizations to adopt their vision of human flourishing as the only one. And that's what's happening, I think, in this debate.
So we want to see people have freedom to believe and even freedom not to believe if they choose not to. Is that really a really, it sounds to me like a pretty good definition of what the freedom ought to look like. But that's not where we're heading, is it? Because you've got this situation where you've got one group now that does not want those religious schools, those Christians, those churches, those aged care facilities, doesn't want them to have a biblical framework to believe what they want to believe.
Yeah, well, I say keep it in your building, but don't bring it outside. Or, there, you know, I've heard the statement, there's no such thing as a Christian maths teacher, or, as in there's no such thing as a Bible version of maths. And you go, well, hang on, the Christian believes that all of life is governed by God and his framework. And our key issue is, can we live with our deep differences in a world in which we don't have any unifying framework? And Christianity would say, we're going to have to, but I think our secular world is saying, no, we want to unify the framework under a different vision of life that we want to say, and it's Christian schools are at the forefront of this, I think, because they're right in the coalface of meeting the secular world. They're paid for by government and by parents. And this other vision is saying, no, that vision is wrong and we will not fund it or maybe accredit it going forward. That's the fight. I actually think Anthony Albanese doesn't want that to happen. I think our Prime Minister is saying, no, I want to find a way for both of those to happen, even if I don't fully understand everything about the Christian framework.
Well, there's a hot debate that is ahead, and there might be a federal election maybe later this year, but probably early to mid next year. Come back to the parents for a few moments and the growth of Christian schools, because some are saying that the state system's actually in a little bit of chaos and decline. Christian schools are flourishing because its parents, even though they might even have a secular outlook on life, they're wanting their children to be educated in a Christian school. What are your thoughts about parents sending their children to Christian schools?
Well, here's the great irony, Neil. As we become more secular and less people even have a Christian background or history, they're sending their kids to Christian schools in droves. And the reason for that is this. They cross the gate of a Christian school in the morning with their kids, and I like to say it hits different. There's something in the air, or what we call the plausibility or the vision of what's going on there, that is caught. Yeah, and people don't... You are taught Christianity at one level if you're secular, but you also catch it. There's something about it. And I think that's why people are signing up. They say, I don't really want you to tell my child to, you know, love Jesus and become a missionary. I want you to make them a great lawyer or whatever it is. But at the level they understand, there's something different going on. And I've never met secular parents who send their children to Christian schools who don't say, oh, I didn't necessarily think the Jesus stuff was what I wanted. But, gee, there was something about that place. I think that's critical. And I know that the newspaper will put scary stories about how kids were forced out because they had different beliefs. Doesn't happen in Christian schools at all. Christian schools are very open to having people of different belief while at the same time saying, this is our framework of what it means to be human. Now, people don't have to agree with it, but if you go to any institution elsewhere, you kind of sign up to how we're going to do this on this spot. And I think Christian schools should hold the line on that one.
I've heard parents say, I'm sending my child to a Christian school because the discipline is different there. And I think that when you get a bit of a forensic focus on that, the discipline mechanisms are basically the same everywhere. But you can't have Christian beliefs without Christian behaviours. And it seems to be the beliefs lead to the behaviours, but those Christian behaviours, they start with a role model, don't they? It's the teaching staff. It's the people who are a part of the school. What are your thoughts here about how the behaviours are actually important, and what people are noticing about Christian schools is that the behaviours actually then even transmit to their own children?
Yeah, and I think it's the way you involve yourself in an ecosystem, you take on that air. It's the air we breathe, as Glenn Scrivener writes in his book, or it's the water we swim in, I suppose, to flip the metaphor. And it's, you catch that at some level. Even if you're not a Christian student, you think, oh, no, there's something about this that's different, and I'm going to navigate my way through it like that. I think Christian schools are great on discipline. A lot of private schools that aren't necessarily Christian are as well, but they're also good, safe places for people who may be different, because they are actually able to cope confidently with people who don't agree with them. But at the same time, I think non-Christian parents, secular parents, are sending their kids because they realize the world looks a bit crazy at the moment. And 2 years ago, this is what was acceptable. And 4 years later, something else totally, even the opposite, is acceptable. Is there something that has a longer term framework and has an understanding of what it means that's stable? Just even the stability is a key issue for people.
You know, church leaders have gotten together, and sometimes we lament the fact that there are not as many joint letters as has been now written to the federal government, and it's a letter addressed to the Prime Minister. You've got these Christian leaders who are saying that it seems to be that the Australian Law Reform Commission has misunderstood what religious schools are all about. I mean, I don't think we're going to have a solution today, but where do you see things going from here, Stephen? Because it almost is at the point where you're going to be saying this is not an easily resolvable situation. There is a really big debate ahead.
Well, if it was solvable, we would have solved it. And I think we keep kicking the can down the road. And I, partly because I think it's a zero-sum game in the eyes of some in places like Equality Australia, the Australian Law Reform Commission, and partly because schools are saying, no, we're different and we're holding the line, because there's nothing worse than the death of a thousand cuts. And so somehow Christian schools are going to have to navigate a legislative era which is more hostile to it than, say, 40 years ago when many Christian schools started to spring up. At the same time, I think the public's looking at this and going, hang on a minute, we can't compel people to believe in anything, and we want to fund Christian schools. But I think it's going to be a long-term venture, because these are oil and water views, because at foundational level, they have different convictions about what it means to flourish as a human and what a human is for, and whether identity and purpose is something that is given to us or it's something we draw from within ourselves. Those two things are key.
You know, as I hear you articulate that, I'm almost persuaded that while there's a big debate ahead, as I can hear you reflect those things, there's also an opportunity here for people to engage in what it is to be human and to flourish, and what it is that makes that flourishing happen. My suspicion is that people catching a hold of some of your wonderful wisdom there today, that could lead us into some great conversations around what it is to have religious freedom and how this affects every Australian.
And yeah, look, I think Jesus is exceptionally good news. I really do.
He's good news. Look, is there an article that you are in the process of writing about this right now, Stephen?
Funny enough, there is. I'm just about to start one today because I've been forming my thoughts. I was in Canberra last week and in Sydney, just watching the eastern states, you know, from my vantage point in the west, how it's forming. There's also a podcast I did last week. You can find it on your favourite a podcast service, Dual Citizens, that I did with someone in Sydney, and it's specifically 40 minutes or so on this issue, how Christian schools are moving forward. So it's Dual Citizens. I should provide the link for you and you can put that up, where we're discussing both the intricacies of the legislation as well as the big picture stuff, and I'll link that. But I will be writing about this issue soon at stephenmcalpine.com if you want to have a look, check it out.
Yes, no doubt there'll be a link on that website, stephenmcalpine.com, stephenmcalpine.com. Stephen is a Christian author, a pastor. He works as a consultant, helping churches and Christian organisations navigate the secular Christian world. stephenmcalpine.com. Stephen, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us today on 2020.
Thanks so much, Neil. Good to be with you.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.